Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathleen O., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, December 16th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 23, the first paragraph that begins with "These observations would be," and we're reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Terry H., will be reading the 12 steps, Joanne L. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Leah S., Penny L. C., and Christina L. The share ID for Tuesday, December 15th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 15,994. That's 15994. This morning's Wednesday, December 16th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the share ID is 16,004. That's 16004. Our newcomer greeter for today is Audrey M.P., and Betsy H. will be making the announcements. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And good morning, Terry H., if you would read the 12 steps for us, please.
Good morning, everybody. This is Terry H. I'm from Pensacola, Florida, a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater through God's grace, one day at a time. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Excuse me. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Number 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having made a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you for letting me do a service, and y'all have a blessed day.
And thank you, Terry H. Good morning, Joanne L. If you'd read the 12 traditions for us, please.
Sure, absolutely. Good morning, everyone. This is Joanne L. from Rhode Island, gratefully recovered. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Least problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. In 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
And thank you so much, Joanne L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 23, the first paragraph that begins with these observations would be, and we're reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. So good morning, Leah S. If you could get us started, please.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. My name is Leah S., recovered and extremely grateful in Brooklyn, New York. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. If you ask him why he started off that last bender, the chances are he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of the man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so that he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of an alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. This is such a packed paragraph, and I will attempt to explain what I have found. I have found that I have come in completely defeated, and I was full of remorse. And what these meetings and this program focused on was the solution, more than what my life was like prior to overeating. And it was so difficult for me to do that. And this program is not telling me to do everything at once. It's just telling me to focus a little bit more today than I did yesterday. Now, over here it says, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc. What is the truth? really the truth? That's what we're trying to understand. To understand that this generous neighbor of mine who I met in the elevator yesterday had a big box and opened that box and said, here, have one. Have one. And the miracle that I did not even want it, and I was graciously able to say, oh, enjoy it in health. That is where I need to focus on. That is where my solution lies on. It's not about the food. It's about the solution that is more important, and that can be found through the steps, through the power of my greater power, and that I call God. I do not eat because I need to put that feeling away. I confront that feeling. I confront the truth. I do not deny step one, not step two, and for sure not step three. In whichever way I understand it, I allow this program to teach me and continue to be taught. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Leah S., for getting us started. Okay, so we are on page 23, the first paragraph that begins with these observations would be, and although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share, who hasn't shared in the last 3 days?
Kristen R.
Heather W.
Kristen, I heard Kristen R. and somebody W.
Heather W.
Heather W. Penny LC. Penny LC. Roz G. Roz G. If you haven't shared Monday or Tuesday, I've got room for two more names. Okay, we'll stop there. So Kristen R., Heather W., Penny LC, and Roz G. Go ahead, please, Kristen R.
Thank you, moderator. Thank you for everybody who made this meeting possible. My name is Kristen R., and I'm a compulsive eater in Northern Virginia. This paragraph is really important to me today. It didn't used to be, because I, for many years, believed deep down inside that I didn't really belong here, that I wasn't really one of you. And I think the reason I belong, I kept convincing myself I didn't belong here was because I was afraid of being rejected. And when I finally came to that realization, it was then that I was able to admit, you know, I do belong, I am one of you, and I need this thing. So the obsession of my mind is what my problem is. And when I think back on my eating behavior, what jumps out the most is how focused I've been on food, how my whole day would revolve around planning my food, getting my food, where I would buy it, how it would eat. And this is even in program too. This is the obsession that took over and sent me back into a relapse. It convinced me that I should buy certain foods for my kids so that I could eat them. It convinced me that it wasn't such a big deal to spend $300 in 2 months at Starbucks because, you know, that's what normal people do, right? I kept thinking that I didn't belong. I didn't belong. I wasn't really a compulsive eater. I was just kind of troubled. And it didn't happen until recently when I conceded to my innermost self that I really am a compulsive eater. I really do have this thing that makes me bodily and mentally different from other people, and I need help. I need to work the steps. I need to rely on a sponsor who's willing to guide me through the steps. And then once I get through the steps, I need to start giving it away immediately, because that's what I didn't do last time. I didn't give it away, and that's what sent me right back into the food. It wasn't overnight, but gradually I slipped and I slid back into the food because I wasn't giving away everything that had been given to me. And that's a promise of this program. If you don't give it away, you're going to get back into the food. So I'm just very grateful today for the steps. I'm grateful for step one and honesty. I'm grateful for knowledge about myself, but even more than that, I'm grateful for the ease and comfort I get from coming to these meetings and from being part of a group where I identify as one of you. So thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Kristen R. in Virginia. And Heather W., you're up, followed by Penny L.C. Good morning, Heather.
Hey, y'all. This is Heather W., recovered in Baltimore. Super grateful to be online. You know, there's some things I can do, some work I could do, but I said, no, you know, let me call into the meeting instead of, you know, hitting my head with the hammer, right? Do more work, you know. Get it done now, that I can take this pause. That's the sanity of the program for sure. And yeah, as was shared, this paragraph is so powerful. You know, it says, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic, compulsive eater, whatever, centers in our mind. It centers in my mind, you know? And it is so true, right? It's not about the food. It's in my mind, right? But it's not about the food once I'm out of the food. When I'm in the food, when I'm still actively eating, when I'm not entirely abstinent, it is all about the food. That's all I'm focused on. My body is craving it. You know, that's what I would plan my days around. What am I going to eat? How will I get it? How will I get rid of it? Am I not going to eat it? You know, it's all about the food. Until I'm entirely abstinent. So it's important to understand this paragraph in context, right? We have to understand it in context that why, even once I'm abstinent, why, even when I'm on the diet, why, when I haven't picked up, you know, my alcoholic foods for a few weeks, why then do I always end up taking that first bite and putting that in motion? Why does it happen? You know, that's because my mind, right? It's a disease of my mind that. What obsession of the mind telling me, pick it up, no matter how many times I've been down that road, that obsession always winning out, you know? And that's why just the first step, it's not enough, right? Just putting down my alcoholic foods is not enough. There's 11 other steps I have to work. If so many people say work like my hair is on fire in order to have that entire psychic change, right? Because now, no matter what happens in my day, no matter what issues and problems I have, no matter what's going on in the world, and we got a lot going on in the world, you know, but no matter what, my mind, it no longer tells me, oh, Heather, eat this, pick it up, it'll make it better. No, I no longer have that, you know. So I'm just so, so grateful for that, grateful to be on the line, already feeling so much better. So thank you all for letting me share.
Thank you, Heather W. from Maryland. Penny L.C., good morning. You're up, followed by Roz G.
Good morning, Kathleen, and thank you for your service, and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. And, you know, if I finally am willing to look at the fact that I have a problem, I finally decide that my eating is out of control, and no matter what I try, I can't seem to get it managed, then I come to this program, I come to these meetings seeking a solution. And that's what this chapter is all about, right? Here's my solution. So I've been clearly told, you know, how my body is allergic and I react to certain foods when I ingest them. And now I'm going to be told about my mind, which when I have that mental twist, my rational thinking is not there. It just isn't. It doesn't exist. I can't be rational. I can tell you that I had the best reason of why I had to pick up that food. I mean, if you'd had my problem at that point, you would have gone looking for comfort as well, and The food was right there to provide it. And I can tell you that I would eat when, but here's the insanity, right? I would eat when I was happy. I would eat when I was sad. I would eat when something didn't work. I would eat when something did work. I mean, there was no way to rationally explain my eating except that I have a mental obsession, a twist in my mind that tells me I need that food. And trying to go off of my own willpower will never be the solution. So here's my solution: a power greater than myself. Wow. Okay. That outweighs all the excuses, all the alibis. It helps me to know that I've got a mental situation that I need to work on my thinking, not my eating. And this book is going to outline it for me and show me exactly how to be offered the solution of changing my thinking. What a concept. To be able to put away all the insanity of the compulsive eating that I've been doing. Oh, that just seemed like a monumental task, but it's come true. It's a miracle. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny. I'll see you in Washington. And before I take you, Roz G., just a reminder to everyone, we're on page 23, the first paragraph that begins with these observations would be, and I'll be taking some more names after Roz G. So go ahead, please, Roz. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. My name is Roz G., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. And so I'd like to focus on the sentence today that says, therefore, the main problem of the compulsive overeater centers in his mind rather than his body. And that tells me that I have a problem with my mind, as we've been hearing all throughout the morning, and my thinking. And recently, I have been going through the big book, replacing the word alcohol for thinking. I'm powerless over my thinking. And that has helped me a lot. So if the disease centers in my mind, the things that I'm thinking about, what am I doing to repair, restore, nurture, and care for in my mind? So last year, I went to outside therapy, and it was a real intensive, it wasn't just sitting and talking to a therapist, it was doing some, you know, other things that, you know, I could talk to people one-on-one. And it was incredibly helpful to help clear my mind of things that the fourth step and fifth step, and, you know, just, I needed to come get some professional help for. So I did some mind work with a professional therapist. You know, I take hot baths. You know, I give myself an exercise program that's balanced. Of course, I have a balanced, well-nourished food plan. And during this pandemic, I'm fortunate enough to live close to the ocean. So every other week, just about, I go and I walk on the ocean. You know, these are things that help me help my mind, because I lived at the bottom of the fourth step and the sixth step. Those character defects, those resentments, fears, and the way I treated people were how I lived. And I needed to clear that up. And I still do on a daily basis. So along with, you know, caring for my recovery, which is coming here every day, and my body, which is eating nutritious food, I have to care for my mind. And by, you know, doing my morning meditation, washing my brain out, God gave me a brain to use. I need to have these brains washed out with the steps. But in the morning when I do my prayer and meditation, as I pause throughout the day, and I send my nightly review to a person in this program just about every night. These are ways of nurturing and caring for my mind. Because as I've heard in the shares, you know, I've been approached, I've had, you know, faced with a lot of different treats over the past few months, and I haven't wanted any of them. That is a miracle. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Roz. Thank you, Roz G in California. Okay, I am going to be ready for some new names. We're on page 23, the first paragraph these observations would be. And if you haven't shared Monday or Tuesday and you'd like to share, love to hear from you.
Kathy L. Hanabi.
Okay, hold on. Let me go back to Kathy. I heard Kathy. Was it Kathy L.?
No, Kathy K.
Jean L.
Kathy K. And who is the L?
Jean L.
Jean L. Okay.
Shlomi Hanabi.
Jason F.
Okay, I heard Jason F. And
Sherry K. B.
Shlomi Hamid. Oh, I'm missing this up, Sherry. Okay, let's stop right there, you guys, because I'm... Okay, Shlomi Hamid, was it B?
Yes, B, like boy.
Okay, and Jason, what was the first initial of your name? Okay, well, I'll get that when we come back. Oh, Jason S, okay, and I have Sherry KB, and I can take one more.
Joanne L.
Joanne L. Okay, thank you, you guys. Thank you. Okay, so I have Kathy K, Jean L, Shlomi Hama B, Jason S, Sherry K B, and Joanne L. So go ahead, please, Kathy K.
Thank you, Kathleen, for your service, and thanks to everybody on the line today. I'm Kathy K, recovered in Boston, and this paragraph and your shares are so timely for me. I have been struggling with unusual anxiety and worry the last week or so. And so it's just reminding me that I am as powerless over my thinking as I am over food. And even though I've been abstinent for a long time, I go through periods where I lose my connection with my higher power and I fall prey to twisted, distorted, negative thinking. And it's really coming to meetings, talking with fellows, and doing whatever I can to reconnect with my higher power that gives me hope and faith that this too shall pass. You know, in the past, after I had quite a bit of abstinence, I would start getting sloppy about my daily spiritual disciplines, and that inevitably led to picking up that first bite. But today, since my food is clean, I'm very, very aware of the negative thinking that creeps back into my mind so easily and feels so true, because it's so familiar. It's how I lived my life for over 40 years before I came to this program. So I listened to all of you today, and I am reminded of how important self-care is, how important is daily meditation and writing and, you know, spending time doing good works for others. These alone interrupt my negative thinking and bring me back to gratitude and acceptance of wherever I am today, knowing that I will find my way back to peace and serenity if I just keep working the steps and taking the next right action. So thank you for giving me lots of hope this morning. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kathy K. from Massachusetts. And Jean L., you are up next, followed by Shlomi Chana B. Go ahead, Jean.
Hi, this is Jean L. in Kentucky. This paragraph is really important to me. It's still part of the step one process, convincing me of my my illness, and it's going to talk about the solution. And you know, the food was just a symptom, and my thinking always took me back to actions which made my life unmanageable. I used to think when I first came in that step one, powerless over food, my life is unmanageable, meant that it was when I was eating that my life was unmanageable. But when I put down the food, holy cow, I can see how my thinking and my actions are unmanageable. And by telling me this disease centers in my mind, you know, the people that wrote the book, they're like, they waited to tell me I have a mental illness. The first they tell me, you know, I'm powerless over the drug, the alcohol, the food, which I can, at least in my experience, readily admit. And then they get you with the second part that says, you know, the disease center's in my mind. It really has nothing to do with the food once I put it down. And it has been my experience that when I have relapsed, it's because I haven't been treating the mind. And the steps for me, the actions within the steps, treat my mind. And as someone else shared about outside help, it was only when I had done the process of the steps and learned those skills that I was able and willing to do what outside resources also requested to help my mind. Thank you.
And thank you, Jean L. in Kentucky. Okay, Shlomi Tana B., you are up next, followed by Jason S. Jason S., go ahead, please.
Thank you, and you pronounced it perfectly. Thanks so much for your service, and thanks, everybody. I'm so grateful for this meeting, and I, too, was struck by the same line that pretty much everybody else has been struck by, which is the problem is in the mind. And as I've been listening to the shares, which have been so powerful, I've been thinking to myself, like, what does that mean for me? And, you know, I realized that, you know, I never was taught how to cope with life, starting from a very young age. I mean, probably from the time I was a baby, honestly. I never learned a constructive, positive way to really cope with life. What I learned was to eat, to rage, to hide in TV and fantasy. And that was how I coped with life. I didn't know how to live life. And to tell you the truth, I really didn't learn how to live life until after my relapse. And that was having been in program for, you know, I guess at that time it was about 17 and a half years. This November was my 20-year anniversary. That's a long time. That's a long time. And I had worked the steps, and I'd worked the steps in OA and in other programs. And I definitely, you know, I guess I definitely had serenity to a certain extent. But after my relapse and coming back and really, really studying the big book and going through it a few times, going through and then relapsing and going through and relapsing, and thank you, God, I'm in a stable place now. I really am learning about my disease, and not just the allergy of the body, but also what my mind does to get comfort. My mind doesn't want to feel that pain. You know, whatever that pain is, my mind wants to knock it down and stuff it down with food or movies or crossword puzzles or whatever it is. And I see that even yesterday. My daughter kind of threw a bombshell on me, which I was actually expecting. It brought up a lot of grief. And what did I do? I started getting on the websites, turning on the radio, because I didn't want to feel. And I realized, wow, look what I'm doing. Look what I'm doing.
Time.
Thank you. And I am learning to recognize when I am trying to hide from life and bringing programs so that I can live life. Thank you. You pass.
And thank you, Shlomi Tana B. in New York. So Jason S., you're up, followed by Sherry K.B. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. Hopefully I can be heard. This is Jason S., compulsive overeater, recovered in Lacombe, Alberta, Canada. Yeah, so the thing that the question that comes to my mind is that why do I take that first bite? And, you know, in the previous paragraph, it said something about that, you know, that when we take away the alcohol, we react like other people. Well, that's not necessarily my experience in some regard, because when I was having the food, or especially when I was trying to abstain from having the food, I was even more of an ass than I was when I was in the food, or so I thought, you know. So this really is where it talks about the, where it centers in my mind, like how I acted, like I talks about coming up with all the excuses. Well, you know, well, you didn't treat me the way I thought you should be, I should be treated, or, you know, I was teased as a kid, or, you know, my mom died, or all these things that they talk about with this buildup of human emotions. You know, that's what I feel like drives me, or I know that my experience has driven me into the food. So, I mean, like, what do I do about that, right? You know, this book tells me that I have no power against that, right? You know, that I don't, we have no defense against the first drink. And it's really around that whole mental obsession
Jason, I think we lost you. You still there?
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to pass.
Okay, thank you so much, Jason S. from Canada. Sherry KB,
moderator,
good morning. You're up, follow.
I'm sorry, this
Sherry,
is Shlomi Tana. I just wanted
yes.
to, just for clarity, that I am in Pennsylvania, not in New York.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Shlomi Tana.
No,
thank
no
you.
Problem.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, Sherry KB, go ahead, please, followed by Joanne L.
Good morning, Kathleen O. This is Sherry KB in Northern California. Thank you so much for your service. Very appreciated. And Team Wednesday and everybody on the line. And welcome, newcomers, and welcome to all of us. So I'm going to dive right in here. Like everybody else is talking about, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind, not his body. Rather than his body. You know, a friend of mine who's a alcoholic, recovering alcoholic, used to say, you know, if you take the alcohol out of the alcoholic, all you have left is the ick. So I'm assuming the same thing about me as a compulsive overeater. If you take the compulsive overeating out of me, you know, all you've got left over is the ick. And unless I deal with my problem, you know, the main problem that centers in my mind, the 12 steps, I'm in trouble. Because, you know, for years, if you look at, well, if I look at my own record, and I look at that, the fact that it talks about on page Roman numeral 28 and 29, the doctor's opinion, that I'm addicted to ease and comfort. If I'm a real, true, compulsive overeater, I'm not a normal person when it comes, you know, being in the world around the food and around my thinking. So, you know, if this disease centers in my mind, which I do believe 100% that it does, that, you know, if I'm looking to feel my feelings in with the food rather than going to a higher power, something's not right there, absolutely, and my thinking in the world and how I feel. And, you know, I'm back in the steps again, learning at a deeper level about myself as a compulsive overeater. And the truth is that I've got a big ego problem. You know, I didn't realize how big my ego was, because it'll play God. You know, it thinks it's how people should be in a certain way and do all this kind of stuff, and it should be different. And, you know, I want pixie dust, unicorn, rainbows, puppies, and kitties all the time. I want to feel good all the time. I'm addicted to feeling good, and I don't like feeling bad, and I want to go fix that. And what I used to do is go to the food. Now I go to God, and I do the steps, and I feel better, and it doesn't last. But, you know, what I had to accept that I'm not a normal person in this world. I would have thought so, but once I started really uncovering, putting my alcoholic foods down, and turning to God, and what a difference it is turning to God and the steps rather than turning to the food, because I'd always end up in misery. But when I turn to my higher power, it makes such an incredible difference. And thank God for God. And I pass. Thanks, Kathleen.
And thank you, Sherry KB in California. Joanne L., you're up next. And just a reminder, we're on page 23, the first paragraph, and I can take a couple names after Joanne L. So go ahead, please, Joanne L.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you very much for your service today. And hi, everybody. My name is Joanne L. from Rhode Island, and I am recovered. And I am so grateful to be on this meeting. You know, I usually go on the 7 o'clock meeting, and Leah needed help with service, so I volunteered for the 10 o'clock. And I'll tell you, I love you people. I love you. I'll be back. And I also am currently working from home, and today is my birthday. It's my 66th birthday. It's my retirement year, and I was supposed to be retired on December 31st, but I decided that if I'm sitting at my kitchen table, which I have been since March, I'm going to stay right here for a little while longer. But that's what I just wanted to say. Everybody, you shared wonderfully on this paragraph. I loved what everybody had to say. But the most important is the line that says, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. So, you know, it's an analogy of the body, obsession of the mind. That's what we have. And even though, you know, today is my birthday, my family's from Massachusetts, so I'm really in this state alone without my family. So there'll be no cake, so I don't have to worry about any of that. And but here's the thing: my neighbor came over yesterday, and she works for Macy's, and she gave me a package, and on top of the package was a whole tin can of cookies from Macy's. And they're extravagant. I can tell by the picture on the tin can. You know, I didn't have the heart to say, oh, no, I can't have that. But I'll tell you what. It's just what I've been hearing from you people. It's all about God. You know, I can do anything as long as I have God in my life. And I love him. I love him so much. I have so many miracles that have happened in my life. I'm a recovered alcoholic of 27 years by the grace of God in January 1st. And now with the food, it's been a long, long road with the food. I've been in this program for a very long time. But in August, I reached out on the phone. I said, I need help. I said, enough is enough. And wouldn't you know, a program person, just like one of you, you know, called me. She happened to know me from a convention. She happened to have my phone number, and she reached out to me, and she's been my sponsor ever since. What a blessing. So I am working on step 11, and it's so nice. It's just so nice to finally, you know, be able to say I'm recovered. So and it says sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense. So, right, I don't want to say today's my birthday. I can eat. You know, Christmas is coming. I can eat, you know, or I can have this one thing. No, I wouldn't think about it to have a drink, and I won't think about it to have any food. And I am just so, so blessed. So thank you, everybody, for being here. Oh, this is wonderful. And have happy holidays, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Joanne L. from Rhode Island, and happy birthday to you. Okay, it looks like we have time for one more share. Would someone else like to share on this?
Janice K.
Okay,
Audrey
ahead,
M.P.
Janice.
Oh,
go
okay.
Ahead, Janice K., and if we have time, I'll get you Audrey.
Okay, thank you. The sentence that hits me with this one is a different one. If I translate it to apply it to myself, it reads, if you draw this reasoning to my attention, I will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. Oh boy, I used to be really good at grocery store honesty. You know, that's the kind where if I have 13 items in the cart, I will not go in the 12 item or less line. If someone gives me a couple of pennies too much change, I will go all the way from home back to the store to return it. But it was not until I did my work in visions that I found out that lying, cheating, and stealing are only one version of dishonesty. And I find that I listened to one of our double winners at one point, and he frequently said, there's honesty, and then there's rigorous honesty. And he says, they're not the same. And they're not. I can stand to be rigorously honest when I live my life under God's umbrella. If I get out from under that protection, I had an outside counselor. I could not tell her the truth. I could not get the words out. Because if you're not one of us, you don't understand. She looked at me like she was offering this great truth, and she said, do you feel that you sometimes eat your feelings? And I thought, no, I eat to squash them dead. I'm not going to let those suckers in. So what strikes me is that persistent dishonesty of the addict. I came across a phrase that said our disease is rooted in dishonesty, and I know mine is. So that's the sentence that hit me, and that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Thank you for listening. I pass.
Thank you so much, Janice K. Audrey M.P., do you want to take a couple minutes?
If we have, I wanted to say hi.
Well, it looks like you have about 1 minute, Audrey.
That's
Audrey.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I know.
Go ahead.
I've been listening more recently. I want to thank everybody for their shares. I've been listening and to what's been in front of us. I got triggered off of a Facebook post from somebody's sugar cookies, like with the frosting, and you know, I'm abstinent today and I'm irritable and discontent today, and I'd rather not talk. Like it says, I'd rather either blow up or not talk. And so I guess I just needed to hear my voice in a meeting this morning. I'm happy to be of service, and thank you for giving me a minute to express my happiness and gratitude for being part of Vision for You, and I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Audrey MP. Okay, and thank you everyone who shared this morning. Really, really great meeting, everyone, and a special thanks to Team Wednesday, Terry H., Joanne L., Leah S., Penny L. C., Christina L., Audrey MP., Betsy H. and Elaine B., thank you so much for making this meeting work this morning. And we will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So Penny L. C., would you please read a vision for you?
Thank you, Kathleen. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.